This is the Covenant Eyes Podcast.
You take away my mobile phone, you'll take away a part of me.
This distinction between the physical world and the virtual one will become increasingly blurred.
Those who perhaps are not very aware of this technology may say, can't you just switch it off? Switch it off.
Thanks for tuning in to the Covenant Eyes Podcast. I'm your host, Luke Gilkerson, and I'm joined today with my friend, Pastor Jim Rose. Today you will hear part three of our interview with Mark Castleman. Mark is the author of The Drug of the New Millennium, a book about how pornography use affects the brain. In today's portion of the interview, Mark talks about how the porn industry markets to women as well as men. He will also talk about how the porn industry uses this knowledge about pornography addiction to market their websites. Lastly, Mark will talk some about how pornography affects crime rates and talk some about the rape myth. You won't want to miss today's interview on the Covenant Eyes Podcast.
Talk for a minute, Mark, about, we talked about young people. Talk about how this, the porn industry is trying to get to women. Talk about the effects of pornography on women, and I know you addressed that in the book, and I thought that was really interesting.
Yeah, that's a great question. You know, those of us who are more old school typically think of pornography as a man thing.
Sure.
You know, it's a thing that guys get involved with, and the women are the victims, which of course is the case. But what we're finding now with the internet and instant accessibility is that this is no longer just a male addiction issue. We're finding increasing numbers of women are starting to become involved with internet pornography. And I think the way to best understand that is to understand motive. You know, we as men are very visual. We have a brain that tends to very narrowly focus on things by its very nature. And people would say that, you know, well, women aren't typically attracted just to images by themselves. You know, there has to be more to it than that. And the thing that's really attracted women over the years, if you think of the romance novels, for example,
yeah,
or the soap operas, the reason that women have tended to be pulled into that is because it's a more holistic experience than just images. It involves relationships. It shows, you know, men and women having a relationship and communicating, and you know, the sexual side is part of that, but it's all part of the whole. And that's how the female brain typically works. It's a very holistic, integrated brain that's looking at the big picture.
Mm.
Well, what pornographers have done is they realize that that's the case, and so the way they're bringing women in is they're addressing some of those more holistic issues. So you'll see women, for example, who are getting involved in this through the chat rooms.
Yeah.
And so they'll go into the chat rooms, and now all of a sudden they're connecting with someone else. They're communicating. They're talking about these bigger issues. And through that process, the chat conversations become sexual, and then they become a little more graphic, and pretty soon the women are then getting pulled into the actual pornography itself. And once they get involved with that, they have a brain that will respond to those neurochemicals just like a man's brain will. And the women can become addicted just as much as a man can become addicted.
Okay. You know, this is interesting because some of the stuff I've read about how the pornography industry tries to essentially rope people in initially, but they also try to, in essence, create addiction as well, much like the tobacco industry was accused of, a couple decades ago. And it's been interesting. I actually found some material from the Adult Video News, which is the major trade magazine for the porn industry. And back in 2004, I found an article that was actually addressed to webmasters of pornography sites, actually presenting psychological data, neurological data, about pornography addiction, and then teaching those people who build those websites how to make it easier for people to become addicts. And so how to fashion their website in such a way to rope someone in and then sort of more or less escalate or speed up the process of addiction that could happen in that person. And I think you and I have talked a little bit about seeing that kind of seeing that firsthand, seeing how people actually have taken this data, this information, and turned it over on its head in order to foster addiction in people, in order to escalate that process.
You know, that's a great point, because the pornographers have become very adept at putting up smoke screens, just as the tobacco industry did for decades. And what the pornographers have done is tried to restrict this to a First Amendment issue.
Mm.
Well, this is just people's ability to express themselves. It's consenting adults, you know, choosing to look at what they want, you know, harmless material. And they've done a pretty good job of distracting the American public to this, you know, freedom of speech argument.
Hmm.
And in fact, in my book, I talk about the fact that it's like the guy who is, you know, at the front of the bank, and he looks like a responsible citizen, and he's just doing his normal banking business. But he's got a partner who's in the back emptying the vault, and nobody really knows what's going on. And so that's what's really happened with the pornographers. They know exactly how addictive this is. They've looked at the brain science, and unfortunately, as you know, some of my colleagues who are really you know, on the science side of this, is the more that they discover and publish, unfortunately, the pornographers look at that and they don't use it to help or heal people. They use it to you know, create more addicts and more profits. So they know that this is powerful. And some of the ways that you know that they're aware of this, you know, they'll claim that we just want this for consenting adults. So why is it that they market to the teenagers? You know, why is it that they make it easy for individuals to go onto the sites? Why is it that they entrap, you know, where they'll have search words that you're not looking for pornography, but if you put in that search word, pornography options come up? Or if you put in misspelled words, or, you know, all the different little dastardly tactics they work, they use to expose unsuspecting people. They're not marketing just to people who are seeking for it. They want everybody to have, as they would call it, the opportunity to see the images, because they know that even on first exposure, that powerful chemical process that's triggered is going to hook a lot of people when they first see it. It's very powerful. And so they know all of those things, and they prey on that brain process in order to make enormous amounts of money.
Yeah, well, that's really interesting, I think, because I know that there's so much pornography out there on the Internet. One of the things that the industry analysts are concerned about is this saturation that happens, because just about every pornographic website offers free samples of viewing their pictures or their movies of some kind, and you have a lot of those out there, and then you have more websites coming up today that will have bootlegged copies of pornographic material and put that out online. So there's an abundance of free material out there, and so they know that the only way to turn a profit, the only way they're going to get people to actually pay for anything, is if they actually create some cycle of addiction. And that's and that I got straight from the mouths of the industry analysts themselves. I think that's a really telling thing, that's one of their goals.
Well, they created a problem for themselves, because they really tried to get this as freely distributed and unrestricted online as they could over the years. But now, as you say, they've created a situation where the Internet's flooded with free material. And so now the question is, well, how do we get paid now that we've created this free environment? And the only way to do that is to push people down the cycle of addiction. So you give them free images of a certain kind. You know that they're going to habituate to those, where the brain will become bored with those same images. And then you let them know, you know, if you put your credit card in and pay this much, we'll let you get to the rest of the images. You know, the more intense ones, or you know, the more graphic ones.
Sure.
And so they understand how that process works. And the other thing I've often pointed out to people, this isn't just about individuals viewing images.
Mm-hmm.
One of the things that the pornographers know that they've got to get the viewer to do if they're going to really addict him or her, and that is that they have to get that individual to seek that crescendo or climax experience. Because at that crescendo, there is a tidal wave of these chemicals that release. And as psychologists will tell you, whatever activity you're engaging in when you achieve climax, that activity will be, you will be addicted or connected to that activity at the highest level. So be careful what you're engaging in when you reach that climax, because it is powerful. And they know that. And so they'll stay right on their sights, you know, in very descriptive and crude language. Here's what we want you to do, you know, as you're looking.
Sure. Well, this has all been really interesting. We've talked a lot about how pornography use, especially over a period of time, will affect the brain. And eventually, what affects our brain affects our thinking, and what affects our thinking is going to affect our actions. In your book, you talk a little bit about this idea you call the rape myth. The studies that have been done to connect pornography use to crime. Now, I know this has been controversial because people know that people use pornography all the time, and that, you know, we don't live necessarily in a society of rapists. Sometimes the connection of pornography use to crime has been criticized. But I really wanted to give you a chance to kind of comment on some of that. Some of the studies that have been done, talk about what those studies are, and then maybe what are some of the conclusions that people have drawn from those studies.
Well, you know, you're right. It's a very controversial subject because there are those who are on the extreme side who will say, you know, pornography is always linked to rape, and that those who view pornography are always going to act out against, you know, other human beings, which isn't true. There are all different kinds of levels of addiction, as there are with any other addictions, and there are all different kinds of personalities and people. So you don't know what the pornography use is going to lead to. That's part of the problem. It's going to affect everyone differently. But there are some things that we do know absolutely about the use of pornography, and I tell people, well, let's look at the lowest common denominator here. What is the lowest level of how this will affect behavior, and what does that mean? Well, one of the things we know for sure is that those who get caught up in pornography viewing, I call it the great thief of human potential. If that person is caught up in pornography and starting to spend significant time in that activity, that's withdrawing them from making meaningful contributions to society. That means that they're not fully present with their spouse. Spouses or kids will say, you know, dad's here, but he's not here. Mm-hmm. He's there physically, but mentally he's in another place. And so it really pulls people out of what I say, if not for pornography, what could I have done? Mm-hmm. What could I have contributed to? Mm-hmm. So that's the minimum that it does. Is it stops us from really doing all the great things and contributing as we could have. But if you go up from there, one of the other things that you find, and this is just simply a part of the brain science, if you have frontal lobes that are being diminished, that are shrinking over time, that means that you're losing your ability to make good judgments, to be a moral person, to make good choices. And if you're losing that ability and you're putting your limbic or pleasure center in charge, you're going to be seeking for self-gratification and satisfying that pleasure need, and you're going to override your logic centers to do that. And so what happens when that's the case? Well, one of the great studies that was done a number of years ago were with regard to what we call sexually oriented businesses. Those in the industry like to say, the SOBs, and like strip clubs, adult bookstores, and some of the police forces and criminal think tanks and communities did a study where they would look at what would happen to crime rates in a community when a sexually oriented business was put into place. And they did a radius around that business and found in about a 3-mile radius the crime rates would go up significantly after that business went into the community. And it wasn't just sexual crimes, it was crimes of all kinds. Theft, breaking into cars, defaming property, all of those different activities would increase. What does that have to do with looking at sexual material? Well, it's because the frontal lobe part of the brain is being diminished. It's being affected, and it's becoming dysfunctional, which means your ability to make good moral choices across the board is being diminished.
Do you think that that also possibly has to do with the that when a sexually oriented business enters into a community that around that business, do you think that that may have to do with the fact that property values also go down, which also perhaps contributes to, new individuals moving into that community that, may, in essence, bring their problems with them? Do you think that might be a contributor, or
I think that's not part of the brain part of it.
That totally makes sense. Yeah, I was looking.
No,
at
I definitely think that's part of it because there's also a a perception of what the area around that sexually oriented business, what that area should look like, the kind of people that should live there. I mean, it's all part of the social culture as well and how that's perceived. You know, so it's a combination of those things. You know, you mentioned the rape myth, and I hear this a lot. You know, there are statistics, for example, that show that rape has gone down in the United States as internet pornography use has gone up. And so some want to claim, well, that's because they have internet pornography as this healthy outlet. And so they're letting off their sexual pressures and their sexual steam, and so they're not going to act out as much. There are two things that we know about those statistics. Number one is that those statistics have been skewed. And if you look at some of the researchers who have taken a look, one of the things that the Department of Justice changed in the rape reportings is that a number of years ago they no longer reported statutory rape in the statistics. So any rape of a person under 16 years of age is no longer part of the statistics for national rape. So that's one of the main reasons why you see the numbers have gone down. The other thing is a lot of people like to use European statistics to get this point across. Well, look at Sweden. I mean, they were the first ones to legalize pornography and prostitution. And if you go over to Europe, you see that, the rape rates and so forth are very low. Well, again, that's not true. What we found in Sweden's case, in the late 70s, they legalized pornography. And then they showed over the next 10 years that the rape rates diminished. Well, there was a researcher who went over and actually looked at the police records, and what he found is that they falsified those records. Mm-hmm. And in fact, the rape rates had increased dramatically. Now, there was a recent, this is one of my favorites, there was a recent incident, it was probably about a year and a half ago, there was a major newspaper article that appeared about some hotels in Sweden. And in those hotels, there were men who were viewing, pornography in the rooms. And the maids in those hotels had to carry emergency beepers on their maids' uniforms because they were being attacked. And so they'd have to hit the emergency button and have security come and assist them because these viewers of pornography were sexually assaulting these maids in the hotels. So that is just it's just pure deception and absolutely not based on truth. Mm-hmm. And so it's what we call the rape myth. The other part of the rape myth, of course, is that when men view pornography, they accept the fact that rape is more permissible, that women are insatiable, they all want to have that that intercourse with the man. And there were a lot of studies done in a few universities where they would show individuals pornography. They would have them take a questionnaire beforehand about their attitudes toward women and rape. They would show them pornography. When they would have them take that same questionnaire afterwards, their acceptance of rape and objectification of women had gone way up after the viewing.
So it's definitely not a victimless behavior. It's an exploitation, a dehumanization of women. There are victims in even pornography use.
Well, of course, because you know I tell people, you know, it diminishes your ability to contribute, you know, to great things in your life. But it also, one of the other great tragedies of pornography is that it objectifies women. Mm-hmm. And all that means is it causes men to look at women as a collection of body parts, mm-hmm. body parts that you would do things to, mm-hmm. as opposed to a holistic, valuable, human being of great worth mm-hmm. and of many different facets, mm-hmm. not just physical appearance. Mm-hmm. And that's a great tragedy for women to be put into that category.
Thanks for listening to this interview with Mark Castleman. You can read more about what Mark was talking about in his book, The Drug of the New Millennium. Stay tuned for the final part of his interview when he talks about three key principles that parents can use to help guard their families from the power and message of pornography and other sexualized media. This is Luke Gilkerson, and you have been listening to the Covenant Eyes Podcast.